And now a look at local and statewide news. The committee that was tasked with researching and considering options for the possible reconfiguration of local elementary schools has decided against changing local schools. As KMXT's Maggie Wall reports, School Superintendent Larry Ledoux shared the decision with the school board and the public at last night's regular Board of Education meeting.
And going right on to the recommendation not to pursue elementary reconfiguration. Dr. Ledoux.
Yeah, I want to share with the board some information relative to our decision administratively not to move forward with reconfiguration.
That was Acting Chairman Julie Kane Hill introducing the topic and School Superintendent Larry Ledoux as he prepared to bring the Kodiak Island Borough Board of Education up to date on the decision of the Reconstruction Committee to halt the effort to reorganize local elementary schools. If it had been approved, local schools would have shifted from the current status of each school having each grade to a reconfigured system with all the students of one grade being housed and taught in one building. Ledoux said that while he favored reconfiguration, after much input from parents and teachers, the Committee on Reconstruction has opted not to go forward.
I'm not recommending to the board for those decisions. I'm not sorry for the effort we put into it. I believe that we had a process, we flowed through it. I personally wish it would happen, but I don't believe it's the right thing to do at this time.
The reasons to support reconfiguration are many, including cost savings, changing enrollment in the schools, better use of teacher time, and more attention to individual children, especially those with special needs. But public testimony was overwhelmingly against the move. Ledoux said the reaction among teachers was mixed, even though principals said they were willing to work through the summer to make the transition happen.
I don't want them to work the summer. They're working really hard right now.
Time and people power was a big part of the decision, said Ledoux. He said the schools are currently in the midst of several major changes, including one to improve math skills, the introduction of a new English language arts program, as well as a K-12 framework for social and emotional development to deal with adverse childhood experiences.
So I believe that we reached a decision not to do it, not because we think it's a bad idea. We really believe that if our community and we embraced it, that it would help us achieve the goals that we have. But if we move faster than our community, if we move faster than our resources, I cannot let the ELA, the social, emotional, or the math initiatives fail, because if we moved in that direction, we would essentially have to drop everything and do nothing but logistics.
Ledoux explained that letting parents know that the school district was listening to them was also a factor in the decision to not go forward with reconfiguration.
And there was enough indication that while we might have had the statutory power to make it happen, it didn't feel right after a while. That doesn't mean that everything we do, it's a vote of the public, but there's a point when you're making a change this foundational in our district, and it was big, that you have to listen closely to your community. And what happens when districts don't pay attention to that, they can make it happen, but it will last only until one or two board elections, and then it will change, and then we're worse off than we were before.
Ledoux added that many of the things that reconfiguration was designed to fix have been fixed through this process of looking at options. For KMXT News, I'm Maggie Wall.
The summer ferry schedule was released last week. Kodiak's first arrival will be from the ferry Kennecott on April 25th, arriving from Homer. The Testamina will make its first trip from Homer on May 2nd. This summer, we'll see somewhat reduced service in some places. According to Department of Transportation and Public Facilities spokesperson Sam Dapsovich, the Testamina will be making chain runs out to Dutch Harbor just once a month instead of twice a month as in previous years.
What we have scheduled right now is one trip per month beginning in May, and that will go through September, total of five trips.
The villages of Yuzinki and Port Lions will see two ferries per week for 2 to 3 weeks out of each month, which is slightly more than in previous years. As of now, the schedule shows no service for Old Harbor this season. The pricing schedule has changed for ferry bookings this year as well. Sailings near special events like Crab Fest will see a 10% bump in prices. Additionally, passenger and vehicle fares will go up as the ferry gets more booked up.
For passenger fares, if the ferry is booked above 30%, then the rate goes up for passengers 5%. The most that the increase would be is 30%, and that starts when the vessel reaches 80% capacity. It's a little bit larger for vehicles and cabins at 30% booking. Vehicle rates go up by 10%, and cabin rates also go up by 10%.
Base fares will remain the same as last summer. Booking is open now on ferryalaska.com, or you can call the local ferry terminal at 907-486-3800. The U.S. Department of State and federal health experts are now advising people against cruise ship travel. The industry has seen meteoric growth in Southeast Alaska, but as Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, precautions over coronavirus threaten to reverse that trend.
The cruise industry projects 1.44 million passengers will visit Alaska this season. But whether that'll materialize is an open question.
This Sunday, growing coronavirus fears.
During a Sunday appearance on NBC's Meet the Press, the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases was blunt.
Don't get on a cruise ship.
That's immunologist Dr. Anthony Fauci, the federal institution's chief. NBC's Chuck Todd pushes back.
No cruise, and how about no airplanes, no trains? Well, I mean, where are you on transportation?
Here's where the recommendation from the CDC. I feel this way strongly, yes. And this will be a recommendation. If you're a person with an underlying condition, and you are particularly an elderly person with an underlying condition, you need to think twice about getting on a plane on a long trip, and not only think twice, just don't get on a cruise ship.
The U.S. State Department had a similar message. It posted a Sunday travel warning that said U.S. citizens, particularly travelers with underlying health conditions, should not travel by cruise ship. It added that the CDC notes increased risk in a cruise ship environment. But there are mixed messages. A day before, Vice President Mike Pence met cruise industry executives in Florida. He told reporters Saturday that an industry-led response to improve passenger screening was planned to ensure people could cruise safely.
It's a great entertainment value for Americans, and we want to ensure that the American people can continue, as we deal with the coronavirus, to enjoy the opportunities in the cruise line industry and be confident that the industry and our government at every level are working in concert to ensure their health and well-being.
Alaska Cruise Industry Representative Mike Tibbles wouldn't talk on tape. But in a written statement Monday, he said the industry was surprised by the State Department's blanket advice against cruise travel. He added that cruise lines would be submitting their plan to the vice president imminently. So what will that mean for Alaska's visitor sector? In the capital city, which receives 99% of cruise visitors, Travel Juno's Liz Perry isn't making any predictions.
We're seeing a few individual cancellations among our Travel Juno partners, but nothing major. One of our partners has indicated that it's a little early in the season, actually, to get a really good gauge on the effect of this message from the State Department.
But looking at the demographics of those most at risk of becoming seriously ill, there are reasons to worry. According to a 2018 profile of cruise visitors by the industry, a fifth of Alaska's cruise visitors are retirees. Governor Mike Dunleavy told reporters Monday that's who public health officials are working to protect.
Young people, children don't seem to be impacted as older folks with underlying issues. That's the group that we're focusing on.
He said the first cruise passengers won't arrive till April, giving the state time to plan.
We're working with the cruise ship industry right now as we speak to make sure that when that season starts that we are prepared to guarantee that our folks are safe here in Alaska.
Screening passengers and crew for coronavirus will be challenging. Current studies suggest people can go 2 weeks, and in some cases longer, before they show symptoms, yet still be contagious. Some business owners in port communities are rattled. Skagway has a year-round population of about 1,000 people, but it was projected to receive more than 1 million cruise passengers this year.
There's definitely kind of a pale over the town. We're definitely discussing it. There's already a feeling that the passenger count will be down.
Carla Ray owns 5 businesses in town that cater to visitors. She feels a blanket warning against cruise travel was too broad. She says it should have been targeted to high-risk groups.
But I think that people are making their plans now to cruise, and I do feel like older people are going to look at that and say, I can just cruise next summer, let's not go this summer.
She's dug back to her records from after 2008. That's when cruise visitors plummeted in the wake of the global financial crisis. Reviewing those numbers, she's put in a hiring freeze and scaled back plans for what had been the promise of another record-breaking cruise season for Alaska. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Lawmakers are considering bringing the session to an end soon if the coronavirus arrives in Juneau. The Legislative Council formed an Emergency Response Preparedness Subcommittee on Tuesday that would develop a plan for an early adjournment of the session. Kodiak Republican Senator Gary Stevens, the council chair, says the plan could include the possibility of closing the Capitol to the public or allowing lawmakers to vote by phone.
The goal is to be prepared to respond should the coronavirus arrive here in Alaska and in Juneau, particularly.
Stephen says there are a limited number of votes that must occur before adjournment.
We've got to pass a budget. That's the one requirement in the Constitution. And the second requirement is we have to, or not necessarily a requirement, but a responsibility is to make sure that we confirm the governor's appointments or not.
Stephen says the subcommittee plans to hold its first meeting on Wednesday in private. He says future meetings will be in public. The subcommittee members include the leaders of both the House and the Senate. The session is 90 days under a 2006 voter-passed initiative and up to 121 days under the state constitution. Today, Tuesday, is day 50. The Emergency Preparedness Response Subcommittee could recommend ending the session before the 90 days are up. The state has instituted a freeze on hiring new state workers and has suspended all out-of-state travel for state workers. Ben Stevens, the chief of staff to Governor Mike Dunleavy, said in a memo to state workers on Monday that these are cost-saving measures in reaction to lower oil prices. He did not cite coronavirus. Legislative leaders also announced restrictions on out-of-state travel. Senate President Kathy Geisel explained that their decision was based on health precautions.
There's a virus out there, and if someone comes in and infects the others, we have to close.
The restriction is intended to protect legislators and their aides, as well as the legislature's ability to function during the session in Juneau. The leaders also strongly suggested staff's personal out-of-state travel be curtailed. The hiring freeze applies to all positions that aren't defined as essential to protect Alaskans. The out-of-state travel suspension affects all state workers. Largely uneventful. That was, in general terms, how the first Iditarod teams arriving at the Rainy Pass checkpoint 153 miles into the race described the trail thus far. Although they contended with a bit of a storm during the first few dozen miles, as Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, many said the trail ascending up the Alaska Range was as good as they ever remember it.
The Rainy Pass Lodge sits above the frozen-over Patilla Lake, high up in the mountains. It's extremely scenic, and close enough to the road system that planes full of race fans, reporters, and tourists arrive in droves, making it a kind of alpine spectacle with dozens of people milling around to snap photos of mushers. Pete Kaiser was the first to arrive, and hoping to bank as much rest for his team and himself before the circus arrived.
Looks like it started, so I don't know. I gotta do my rest.
But if this was the most excitement mushers had seen so far, they sounded fine with it. Snow and wind hampered the first leg of the race, but after Squintna, Kaiser says things were great.
The first 4 hours of the race was going to end, and it was real slow, just like everyone thought it would be. And deep, and then it kind of slowly improved mile by mile after that, and this Finger Lake to here was a great trail.
Nobody seemed fazed by the squall early on. In the sunshine on Pantilla Lake, with mild temperatures and some manageable wind, Richie Deal seemed pleased with the most recent run.
I mean, you're just climbing in and out of the hills, you know, and so it's kind of slow in that way, but I thought it was a pretty good run over.
Most of the first mushers who made it to Pantilla opted to rest before heading further up through Rainy Pass itself. Wade Mars was using a Bowie knife to split up frozen hunks of beef, salmon, and tripe to feed his team. He says so far the trail has been the best and worst of both worlds.
Early on was a horrible trail, worst I've ever seen, but it's getting pretty good. Probably the best trail I've ever seen going into Finger Lake, and really nice trail coming into here. So, but the Yatna Squintna stretch was pretty bad.
One musher having a particularly good day was Paige Drobny. She drew the last starting place, leaving Willow in 57th position, but she pulled into Pantilla Lake in the 10th spot. Fetching water from a hole in the ice, she thinks she was able to leapfrog so much because she had a different run-rest schedule.
I did 3 runs a year, and I think a lot of people are doing 4. I ran for 6.5, rested for 3, ran for 6.5, rested for 4, ran for 5 to get here.
After crossing Rainy Pass, mushers hit Roan before descending the Alaska Range. On Pentilla Lake, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Just a note that tonight NPR is providing live election coverage and KMXT will be joining. The program is scheduled to start at 4 p.m. Alaska time and run until at least 7 p.m. We will air their coverage until 7, preempting All Things Considered, local news, and Alaska News Nightly this evening. We'll also have two alternative news magazine shows, Climate One and Here and There, on HD3 from 7 p.m. until 9 p.m.
The local news is supported in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, home of the Tempur-Pedic Ergo Collection and the Tempur-Pedic Breeze, made especially for those who sleep hot. The Breeze cushions and supports you while channeling excess heat away from the mattress. Tempur-Pedic's Ergo Base allows you to move the bed into multiple ergonomic positions for sleeping or relaxing. 486-5554.
And by Arctic Physical Therapy Services, Incorporated. Professional rehabilitation for all your physical therapy needs. We repair the world's most complex machine. 813 Mill Bay Road, 486-4499.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. There are some big hurdles for increasing U.S. seafood sales. More after this.
Integrated Marine Systems is the leader in marine refrigeration in Alaska. Simple, reliable, built to last. Visit imspacific.com.
The Alaska Marine Safety Education Association is offering marine safety instructor training in Seward, April 20th to 25th. Learn more at amc.org.
A lack of knowledge about seafood is the biggest hurdle to increasing sales and U.S. consumption. Results of a first-ever Power of Seafood survey of over 2,000 Americans by the Food Marketing Institute yielded some surprises about why Americans aren't buying more seafood and revealed hurdles that prevents them from buying more. A recap of the survey by Seafood Source found that only 56% of Americans eat seafood twice a month. Freshness and flavor have a major impact on seafood purchases, but most shoppers said they feel turned off by their lack of knowledge. Nearly half of consumers said there's not enough information about how to judge quality and freshness, and 42% said they wanted more information about different species of fish and shellfish. Guy Pizzuti, seafood manager for the Publix chain, called consumers' worries about evaluating freshness a failure of the industry. Just 29% of the respondents said they feel very knowledgeable about how to buy seafood. Only 28% said they felt confident in how to prepare or season it. Pizzuti added that the industry has been talking about teaching consumers how to prepare seafood for decades, and it still hasn't been figured out. Dave Weir of the Meyer chain added that the industry is too busy telling consumers what boat caught the fish instead of how to cook it. He said they've taken their eye off what consumers really want, and the industry is terrible at this and must improve quickly. The survey found that the average seafood eater spends more on food than non-eaters, showing it to be a small but lucrative demographic group. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. You're listening to the Island Messenger. I'm Maggie Wall. Looking at the weather today, right now, very sunny, nice out, not cold at all, or it doesn't feel cold. Tonight, clear skies with a low around 19, northwest winds around 20. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 28. Tomorrow night, clear, low around 21. Thursday, sunny, high near 33. Thursday night, low around 27 with clear skies. And then as we get toward Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, partly clouds, but otherwise partly sunny those days. So it looks like we'll have a nice weekend as well. Looking at the almanac for today, this is my favorite section because I get to tell you how many hours we have of daylight, but how many minutes we gained. Amelia is here with me today, and so she's going to be helping with some of the announcements. Sun came up this morning at 8:40. It sets tonight at 1 minute past 8 o'clock, which means we've broached the 8 o'clock mark there in the evenings. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 8:38. That gives us 11 hours and 26 minutes of daylight today. It's a gain of 5 minutes even. And Willie is the one that puts these together for us, so thanks, Willie. Record high today was in 1931, 49 degrees. Record low was set in 1966, just 1 degree. Looking at the marine forecast for the local waters, Chiniac Bay and Marmot Bay, rather just Chiniac Bay, small craft advisory is in effect through tonight. Northwest winds 30 knots, seas 4 feet, freezing spray. Tonight, northwest winds continuing but backing down to 25, seas dropping to 3 feet, continued freezing spray. And tomorrow, everything drops down a little bit more and the freezing spray continues. We have no fish and game announcement, so let us look and see what's doing with the tides. The next tide for Kodiak is a high tide at 3:21. It'll be 9.96 feet. Low tide will be at 9:36 this evening, minus 1.53 feet. High tide for the Seldovia District on the west side, the Uganic Bay area, is at 3:53 this evening, rather this afternoon, 17.89 feet. Low tide will be tonight at 10:11, minus 3.58 feet. Looking at some of the announcements we have, let me start off, and then I'll let Amelia take over. We do have a programming change this evening for All Things Considered. Today is another election day in other parts of the country. NPR is providing live coverage tonight, and KMXT will join their coverage. The program is scheduled to start at 4 o'clock Alaska time and run until at least 7 o'clock. We will air their coverage until 7, preempting All Things Considered, local news, and Alaska News Nightly. We'll also have two alternative news magazine shows, Climate One and Here and There on HD3 from 7 o'clock till 9 o'clock tonight. So election coverage starting at 4 o'clock here at KMXT. Amelia has a few announcements.
The Kodiak City Council will hold a work session on Tuesday, March 10th, 2020. That's today. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library Multipurpose Room at 612 Egan Way. This work session is open to the public. For additional information, call the city clerk's office at 486-8636. And today there's also a notice of a budget public hearing at the Bayview Road Service Area Board, and that will be at the Bayside Fire Hall. And also today at 12, what time is it now?
12:30.
Okay, well, then right now there is a meeting at the Borough Conference Room for the Board of Equalization, and tonight at 6 for the Fire Protection Area Number 1, there will be a meeting at the Bayside Fire Hall.
Thank you very much, Amelia. And coming up next, we have Talk of the Rock. With us is Sarah from the Chamber of Commerce talking about Comfish, which is coming up in just a couple of weeks, 2 weekends from now. And she'll be going on, telling us about what kind of events and special things. And they have a new thing this year, fashion show. And that'll be interesting to learn more about, see how we can get involved in that. That'll be coming up right after this.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.